Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. On the docket today, Lori Vallow. Second, Jody Arias. Let's talk privileges. Third, Jussie Smollett gets some more bad news. Fourth, a Kristen Smart cold case update. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. Thank you for tuning in. If you have not done so already, we would ask that you please subscribe, hit that little bell for notifications, and finally, leave us a comment below. Well, let's talk Lori Vallow. Now, the other day, the district attorney released the list of potential witnesses that could be called by the prosecution. It's not a final list, but every time the government interviews a witness, has some information, they have to get listed on a witness disclosure list, and those lists have to be updated as new witness information becomes available. The prosecution can't hide the ball when it comes to any of that type of information. Now, one of the witnesses listed was Chad Daybell, obviously, husband number five, and Lori Vallow's son, Colby Ryan, are on the witness list. Now, Colby Ryan apparently is not a big fan of Lori Vallow. However, he did in fact go see his mom when she was in custody in Idaho. So today I want to talk about privileges. And we'll talk about this more when we talk about Jody Arias, but probably the privilege that most people are familiar with is that of attorney-client privilege. What you tell your attorney remains with the attorney. There's also another privilege called spousal privilege. It was originally founded in common law to promote harmony among spouses, and that so basically a wife or a husband wouldn't testify each other and create a lot of hate and discontent in that same household. The privilege belonged to the person making the statement as well as the person when they were actually a defendant. The defendant is the one that holds the privilege, and the defendant would have to be the one to say, yes, I will let my spouse take the stand and testify potentially against me or testify as to what I said. Now, you don't hear a lot about spousal privilege much anymore because as it was a creature of common law, it was put into the statute books over the years, and those have been whittled away. The biggest case where those come in are, for example, domestic violence type cases, as well as child abuse type cases. Because if one spouse is, let's say, spanking another child, and he says, you know, let's say somebody confesses to spanking the child too hard, causing bruises or injuring him, and he tells his spouse, oh my gosh, I apologize, don't tell anybody, I feel so bad about it. Well, in that particular case, if the defendant was charged, the wife could not be forced to compel testimony against her husband if she were called to testify. So obviously that was a huge hindrance for cases. So what do district attorneys do when they don't like the rules that they play by? That's right. They go to the legislature and they change the rules in their favor, which has basically eliminated the spousal privilege. Spousal privilege doesn't apply in cases where there is, for example, domestic violence, abuse against somebody in the household, child abuse cases, even actually racketeering cases, there is no spousal privilege. Now, that spousal privilege would remain with the defendant even if one were to get a divorce. Due to exceptions in the Idaho spousal privilege, there would be no privilege if Chad Vallow were called to testify as it relates to his wife. Now, I don't see a district attorney necessarily calling Chad DeBell to testify against Lori Vallow unless he actually knows what he's going to say. Who knows what he'll say, or whether he would actually assert the Fifth if he has some knowledge or participated in some type of action. More than likely, he would assert the Fifth if he were called to testify. At least at this point, he could always be given a grant of immunity. So the spousal privilege isn't going to apply in the case of Lori Vallow and Chad DeBell as the husband. Additionally, there would be no privilege as it relates to Lori Vallow's son, Colby Ryan. So let's say, for example, if she goes in and talks to him while at the jail, the police could go question him and say, what did she say? He could refuse to tell the police officers regarding the nature of their conversation, but if he were forced to go to court and discuss the nature of that particular conversation, he would have to tell the truth, or he could be held in contempt by refusing to answer those questions. There is no privilege, and that's why defense attorneys always tell their clients, don't talk about your case. Criminal defendants have this idea that somehow the only thing that can be used against them is what they tell the police. Absolutely not true. Not to get too far in the weeds, but anytime a defendant, a party to the action, anything they say can and will be used against you. Okay? Those Miranda advisements that they give to the police, that's a warning created by the courts under Arizona v. Miranda, where they said, we're going to warn people, all right? And guess what? They still talk all the time. But anything you say to anyone, including your children, can be used against you. Spouse, depending on the type of case. Your parents, there's no privilege as it relates to your parents, and certainly not your cellmate or your buddy from the streets. And so you have to always advise your clients, don't talk to anyone about the facts of the case. It's so difficult because that's usually the elephant in the room. Everybody wants to talk about it, but there's no privilege that's going to apply. And it'll be interesting to see if investigators have interviewed Colby as to what he talked about with his mother. More than likely, it's nothing, but if he's no big fan, you never know what they're going to say. And it's always the defendant's own words that come back and bite them in the end because they talk. Next on the docket, let's talk about Jodi Arias. Now, for those who do not recall, Jodi Arias was convicted of first-degree murder in 2013 and sentenced to life in prison in 2015 for the 2008 killing of her on-again, off-again boyfriend, Travis Alexander. Last month, the Arizona Court of Appeals affirmed Arias' murder conviction and rejected her request for a new trial. So needless to say, Jodi Arias' appeals are running out. Only thing she'll have left is a habeas petition, more than likely to the federal courts, and those are normally rejected. Now, let's talk about the attorney-client privilege, which we mentioned a bit ago. Now, for those of you who don't recall, for those younger audience members out there, Kurt Nurmi was the attorney for Jodi Arias. And he made an appearance on a crime show this week to talk about his new book coming out, Trapped with Miss Arias. And he is not a big fan of Jodi Arias. In fact, Jodi Arias sued Mr. Nurmi, alleging a breach of attorney-client privilege for revealing confidential information. Now, ultimately, Mr. Nurmi forfeited his law license after a bar complaint was filed against him as it relates to Jodi Arias. But he is selling his book now, and so really, who cares? And frankly, even if she won and prevailed against him, what are her damages? They're going to make her look bad in the eyes of the public opinion. She's got no damages. So good luck. It was interesting to learn that Mr. Nurmi kept the case because he was originally with the public defender's office And basically, he was ordered by the court to continue his representation of Ms. Arias. And Mr. Nurmi stated that his time as court-appointed counsel for Ms. Arias was the equivalent of involuntary servitude, basically having to work and not get paid. Court-appointed cases don't make a whole lot of money on your hourly rate. Needless to say, Ms. Arias and Mr. Nurmi are not exactly the best of friends, and on talking, they're not going to be probably exchanging Christmas cards. They spar with each other when they can. But Mr. Nurmi went on to say during this interview that he's going to have to learn to let it go, and he blames the stress surrounding Arias as the cause for his cancer diagnosis because of the stress that was put on him. He also makes no comments about the district attorney, Juan Martinez, who was recently fired from the Maricopa County from the Maricopa County District Attorney's Office. He stated he has no contacts, but he also stated that he wouldn't be rushing to defend Mr. Martinez in any court, that's for sure. But what I want to talk about as it relates to the Arias case in this interview is the attorney-client privilege, all right? You can generally talk about a case. You can't reveal what somebody has told you in that particular case. That's attorney-client privilege. Just like the spousal privilege, you want that harmony and not create tension. Same thing as it relates to the attorney-client privilege. We want clients to tell our clients the whole truth so they can get the best legal advice and counsel from them at that time. And in exchange for that truthfulness is you have to be assured that you can't and are not telling secrets of your clients. You can't reveal them unless you get permission to do so. And there are some exceptions to that. If your client says that he is going to go harm somebody immediately, he has a duty to the attorney has a duty to report that to the law authorities if they believe it is a credible threat. However, if they came to you and said, I just did terrible things to somebody, you cannot reveal that unless you have permission to do so from your client. Additionally, if the client said, I did terrible things, and here's the weapon that I did terrible things, the attorney cannot dispose of that. In fact, he has an ethical duty to turn that over to the authorities. He shouldn't explain to them how it necessarily got there, but he just says, here's the instrumentality of something that may have taken place. I've never personally had to deal with that particular one. However, I have had cases whereby people have told me of things that they have done because they wanted to kind of get things off their chest. But I said, if you do, you understand, you shouldn't tell that to anybody else. Otherwise, you'll be fully prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And so they get that, but they were able to tell somebody. And we've talked about this before on Crime Talk, where on these cold cases, somebody knows something. It's very difficult for someone not to want to tell somebody about a case or where it sounds similar or they're asking for a friend, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more, that kind of thing. So when it comes to the attorney-client privilege, you can't reveal it. And if you do reveal those confidences, you obviously face possible punishment for that and even disbarment. I, like all the attorneys that I know, at least we know, we take that very, very seriously. You can't do certain things without that. Now, the one big exception to the attorney-client privilege is, let's say you have a client. You've zealously represented him. He thought you were the greatest thing since sliced bread until, well, the jury comes back guilty. Then, all of a sudden, your stock plummets. You're the biggest bag of trash. And the defendant starts bad-mouthing you. And you're like, man, I did everything I could. I mean, we were all on board at the time, but now his appeals are exhausted. So now he has to say that you're ineffective. He files an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. And he says, my attorney didn't do this. And this decision if he knew about this and he didn't investigate it. Or he did this and he knew about this and he didn't call this witness. Well, guess what? The client at that point, former client, doesn't get to basically badmouth you and create lies. When they raise ineffective assistance of counsel claims, although you usually best course of action is have the court find that there's a waiver of the attorney-client privilege before you go speaking with the prosecution who's defending the conviction, really then helps you out at that point. But once the court makes that finding that there's a basically a breach or waiver of that attorney-client privilege, you can tell them anything is related to that particular case to basically clear your good name and say, well, let me tell you, client, the reason why we didn't call this witness was because we actually interviewed this witness. And guess what? They were going to bury you. So it was a tactical decision. We didn't do that. Or guess what? We didn't call this particular expert witness because basically what it turned out was the information you gave us wasn't accurate because maybe you were untruthful to me at the time as the attorney. So those are the exceptions to the attorney-client privilege. The attorney has a right to defend themselves with basically the truth. And I assure you, you know, how doctors, they see a patient and it seems like they spend a bunch of their time writing reports because if it's not in the medical reports, it doesn't exist. Guess what? Attorneys spend most of our day writing letters, writing memos to the file. Why? To protect yourself if anybody comes back and says you did something or didn't do something. Most attorneys, or at least the way we practice law, and we love all our clients, we do, you have to assume, particularly when you're dealing with high-stakes criminal cases where people are going to spend the rest of your life in prison if you lose, that if they do so, you have to have your file ready to go and basically say, we anticipated this. And every serious case is normally done like that to not only protect the client and the attorney themselves, but the courts as well, so that integrity is maintained. We keep copious notes of conversations. We do follow-up letters to keep people informed. That's what attorneys do. So when someone starts bad-mouthing you, if they waive that privilege, you can say, do you really want to talk about this? I got this memo of this conversation on this particular day. You really want to go there? Yeah. As a general rule, attorney cannot reveal client confidences even after they are deceased. You as the attorney, have to take them to your grave. And I tell you, there's some amazing stories I wish I could tell, but I just can't do it. Next on the docket, a Jesse Smollett update. Well, Mr. Smollett received some more bad news. As you may recall, back in January of 2019, Mr. Jesse Smollett, who just happens to be an actor, lives in Chicago, claimed that he, as an openly gay black man, was attacked in Chicago by two masked men who beat him up, tied a rope around his neck, and taunted him with racial and homophobic slurs. And I think he threw in that the attackers also had a hat on saying, "Make America Great Again." Needless to say, when this first came out, these allegations, people were shocked. How could this have happened? It must be a bunch of racists that did this. Well, as things developed, it turned out that Mr. Smollett maybe wasn't completely truthful with the police authorities. And the reason why they think that was because they talked to the two brothers who were the alleged attackers, and they explained that they were paid to do this by Mr. Smollett for some reason. Ultimately, Mr. Smollett had a case against him. It was resolved in the case of the century. If you go back and look at cases or videos that we talked about at that particular time, I said, man, that attorney's got to be the best attorney in the state of Illinois for that deal. Basically, Smollett did nothing, did a little public service, and forfeited his bond of about $10,000. Well, people got offended. The police were offended. Further investigation was done, and it turned out that the district attorney had ties to Jesse Smollett, and apparently, I believe Michelle Obama at the time, where they had talked and families had talked about this case and that Mr. Smollett was a good guy. Well, it turns out After further investigation, a court found that the district attorney did not, in fact, recuse herself by simply appointing her number two in command. They should have sent it to a different district attorney altogether. Well, ultimately, that leads to new charges being filed against Mr. Smollett, where he now faces numerous felony counts for false information to the police. Those charges are still pending. Well, after the original case was dismissed, Jussie Smollett filed a malicious prosecution lawsuit based upon the old case being dismissed, the new one being filed, and the fact that the city wanted to recover the cost of their investigation, which totaled some $300,000. Well, the court yesterday threw out Mr. Smollett's claim. The U.S. District Court judge presiding over Smollett's matter, Judge Virginia Kendall, said that Smollett could not file a malicious prosecution claim until and after all of the proceedings against him, including his February 20th indictment on six counts for allegedly lying to the police about the attack, have ended. The reason why that's being done, could you imagine if everybody filed a malicious prosecution suit every time a case was filed? No. Nothing would ever get done. To prevail in malicious prosecution, you basically have to say that the courts and the district attorney knew that there was no basis in law, in fact, and they took this case just to get you for standing up for your rights. Very, very difficult, particularly when a neutral and detached magistrate, or in this particular case, a grand jury reviewed the indictment or and heard the evidence, issued an indictment. Normally, there's a probable cause review as it relates to the indictment or a challenge to that if there was no probable cause, but that exists. And so it looks like Mr. Smollett has more trouble coming his way because it doesn't look good on the criminal side. It looks even worse for him prevailing on his criminal suit, even if he were to file a new one, since this one was thrown out. Now, next on the docket, let's talk about the Kristen Smart case. We talked about this yesterday, that some search warrants were actually executed at the residence of a person of interest, and the police said that they, in fact, recovered some items of interest. Now, obviously, they're not going to reveal that information because there's an ongoing investigation. The home of Paul Flores was searched, and the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office are the ones that had issued the search warrant. Flores was detained at his San Pedro, California home and released back to his home after the search began about 7 a.m. and went for about 3.5 hours. Now, obviously, Mr. Flores is given the presumption of innocence, and he will obviously get that from us. But for those of you who aren't familiar with this particular case, Smart was a 19-year-old freshman when she disappeared on May 25th of 1996. She was last seen near her Cal Polytechnical San Luis Obispo dorm, walking home from a party. There was a huge search after this, and this was a big case at the time. And after a massive search and interviews with students who walked with her that night, yielding no breaks, Smart was ultimately declared dead in 2002. It had been reported that the family was contacted by a retired FBI agent who had worked this case long ago, stating that they believed that something big was going to happen. And the family was obviously hoping for something. And like we talked about yesterday, these detectives that work these cold case units are usually the best of the best. They've been around a long time. They've handled the cases. Sometimes it's their retirement duty, so to speak, but they've seen it. They've been there. They can go do it. And I've told you about the case we talked about yesterday where I had an old cold case and the detective on it was one of the best I've ever seen and worked with. And if I ever had anything bad happen to anyone in my family and didn't know what had happened, I would hire this detective to figure it out. He's that good. So hopefully for the Smart family, justice will be done. And, you know, you never know, like we talked about earlier, anything anyone says to anyone can be used against them. And that's a heavy burden for someone not to have to share with someone, whether they're drunk or little pillow talk with somebody. Somebody knows something. Somebody can come forward. Hopefully somebody will. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day comes from Lake Bay, Washington. And an unidentified suspect was alleged to have been stealing items from a summer camp, but before he was arrested, he took the police on a little bit of a chase. So imagine this, a call comes in from a nonprofit summer youth camp, and the call states that a trailer along with lots of items from the summer camp are in the back of the trailer. The police, doing their patrol, is aware of it, spots the trailer, figures out that's the same one. And these drivers, instead of pulling over and just kind of taking the case, so to speak, no. They drive along. And while they're doing that, they throw out what was at the time believed to be actual firearms, but it turned out to be BB guns. And instead of just pulling over and taking the hit for stealing a trailer and some items used at this non-for-profit summer camp, no. What do? You drive faster. Yes, that's right. You attempt to elude. Now, our unidentified individuals from Lake Bay, Washington, they are dumb criminal contestants of the day for this very reason. You are pulling a trailer. Do you really think that you're going to get away from the police when you can probably maybe go 60, 70 miles an hour max? And we know that. Why? Because you tried to do so. Eluding is probably one of the dumbest criminal offenses one could do. Yes, occasionally somebody gets away from the police, but guess what? They come and get you. They get your license. And even if it wasn't the owner of the vehicle driving, they promptly tell who was in fact driving so they didn't get in trouble. And it is one of the few cases where even if you have no criminal history, the chances are good you're going to prison, because most judges look at those crimes as something that seriously endangers the public. Somebody eluding a police officer at high rate of speed increases the chances of an accident and someone being seriously injured or killed so greatly, so exponentially. Judges hate eluding. So we don't have the names of our two unidentified drivers in Lake Bay, Washington, but hey, you know who you are, and if you are our dumb criminal contestant of the week, you can receive a Crime Talk mug and attorney-client privilege. I won't tell you what your names are, but we'll still give you the mug. Thanks for watching Crime Talk today. We really do appreciate you taking the time. We know there's lots of things you could be doing in a lot of free time these days. So the fact that you watch Crime Talk, we are super appreciative. Now, if you want some of the Crime Talk merch, you don't have to go buy it. We're not going to shut down Crime Talk if you don't buy it. But if you want a mug and you don't want to become a dumb criminal contestant of the day, you can hit the link below. And they've got shirts and they've got other things that you can get if you really like it. Nobody's forcing you to do so. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook. You can join Patreon if you really want to as well. It's all appreciated, but not an obligation anyone has to do. We will continue to bring you free videos here on YouTube. Thanks for watching. Have a great day.